Hi, this is Sheila with the Communicate Influence podcast. If you love animals, you'll really enjoy this episode. I talked to Maureen Armstrong, host of The Animal Guide for Curious Humans. The Animal Guide is an independent podcast show launched in November 2021. Maureen shares invaluable insights into what it's like to plan, create, and launch an independent podcast show. We discuss what motivated her to begin podcasting, episode planning, connecting with guests, technology, and growing an audience. If you're set to launch an independent podcast show soon, this episode is a must listen. And you can find The Animal Guide at the website theanimalguide.com. We'll have all the links in the show notes. And thanks for listening. Hi, Maureen. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Sheila. Thanks so much for the invitation to be on.
Oh, you're welcome. It's great to have you. I'm excited to find out more about your podcast show, The Animal Guide for Curious Humans. But before we jump into that, tell us more about you, where you're based and your background and what you do.
Sure. Happy to do that. So me, I am professionally a lawyer by trade, worked for many years in public service and greater public service, primarily in the areas of human rights law and public law. I've always had a real passion for human rights issues, inequality issues, and so that comprised most of my professional life. In 2019, I retired from full-time employment, and I do still do contract work around legal issues and governance issues. I also have a great passion for governance. And so that's on the professional side of the business where my life is. I am based in Muskoka, Ontario, so a couple of hours north of Toronto. After retiring from full-time employment, my husband and I moved up there permanently. So that's where we are most of the time. So with having a little bit more time on my hands, not being in full-time employment, I became very interested in doing something around animal welfare and animal protection beyond what I was doing on a volunteer basis and still do. I am currently the chair of World Animal Protection Canada. Thoroughly enjoy being a part of that organization. But I really wanted to dedicate more of my time to trying to help the plight of animals around the world. So that's what prompted me to look at the expanse of the podcast world and consider what might be possible in talking about animals in a podcast.
Now, being chair of, can you say the name of the organization again?
Yes, it's World Animal Protection Canada is the organization I'm the chair of, but it is an international organization. There are several chapters of it around the world.
Okay. So being chair of that organization and then starting your own podcast, that really reveals a real depth of caring about animals. Tell us about your connection with animals. Where did it come from? Where did it arise? How old were you when, you know, you realized just how important animals and animal welfare is to you?
Thanks for the question. It's a fascinating one. And everyone that I engage with on the subject, we all have stories. One of my guests talked about being influenced by the television show Flipper from the 70s. And that's what got her interested in dolphins. And then she is now a world-renowned philosopher on animal cognition. For me, I have to say that the love of animals just feels like it is part of my DNA. I think it started, I was 3 years old or something when apparently I wandered out of the backyard, much to my mother's horror, and they found me a couple of houses away curled up with a kitten. I had obviously followed this kitten. I find joy and fascination in animals that just comes, it's just internal to me. It just comes from a place of interest and love. So I can't pinpoint one thing. I just feel like it's a part of who I am. And my husband always says to me, you are never happier than when you are observing, whether it's my own dog or other dogs or cats, that I encounter or wildlife. It just is, it feels almost inherent to who I am as a human being.
So you were 3 years old and you wandered down the street to be next to a kitten, but did you have any pets in your home?
We did. We had cats. Unfortunately, the first cat got away and didn't return. Poor soul. Don't know whatever happened to her, but we had cats primarily in my household. I was always keen to have many pets. And I recall once finding there was a beagle in the neighborhood that seemed to be lost and carrying this beagle in my arms to the door of our house and saying, gee, you know, can we keep this dog? And my parents were not at a place to commit to having a dog, and of course knew that the best thing to do under those circumstances was to just call and find out. This is obviously an animal whose family is missing it. So we got the beagle back to its home. But yeah, I grew up with cats. And then as an adult, had cats for many years and then have had dogs for two decades.
And when you got to the age in your childhood or your adolescence where you're starting to think about your career, were there any options that you considered that, you know, would have let you work with animals? What was it that made you decide upon law as opposed to, you know, for example, zoology or becoming a vet?
Yeah, I made a declaration very early on. I think I was 9 or 10 years old, and I declared to my parents that I was going to be a lawyer when I grew up. And neither one of my parents were in law. As a matter of fact, I didn't even know a lawyer. But I was compelled by concepts of justice. That's really where it came from. And particularly things like gender equality, racial equality, that was a real driver for me. And so I made this declaration so early on that I wanted to pursue a law career that I actually didn't stop to consider other options. It wasn't until, in fact, I was about to be called to the bar that which, you know, was many years later, that I said to myself, gee, why didn't you ever think about shifting into something else, like zoology, for example, as you indicated, or anthropology, some of the areas where there's a lot of study of animals. So it was maybe a bit of a missed opportunity. It made for less confusion for me as a youth than many of my friends who were struggling with figuring out what they wanted to do with their life. But in my case, I had that clear pathway and I was just on the side enjoying my life with animals and not really having thought about it as a career pathway. And yet there are a multitude of pathways that one can take if they're interested in animal welfare and animal protection.
But as you mentioned, you had that really strong sense of justice. And that probably, I'm sure, included what was fair and right and just for animals as well.
Yes, very much so. It was in there as a part of that sense of what is a fair and just world. And the examples or the ideas of the concern for the animal kingdom at that point in time, like as a youth, as say a teenager, was mostly around issues of the risk of abuse to companion animals, cats and dogs. That's the sort of thing you heard about a lot. Mm-hmm. But the full spectrum of appreciating poaching for elephant ivory, ownership of wild animals as exotic pets where they cannot thrive the way they are intended to thrive, none of that was really in my sense of awareness until I was much older. But very much so, my values are rooted in a sense of caring for and wanting to live in a just and fair society. And that absolutely includes all of the non-human animals in our world.
And tell us, just before we start talking about your podcast show, you mentioned that you're chair of World Animal Protection Canada. Can you tell us about that organization and what your role is?
Sure. So World Animal Protection, the original organization, the international organization, is located in London in the United Kingdom, but there are several affiliate country organizations, of which Canada has one as well. And World Animal Protection is very much looking to move the world to institute better policies and systems to protect animals from needless suffering. That's very much our focus, is we have to be centered around reducing practices that are having adverse impact and creating needless suffering within the animal kingdom. So currently, the organization, I mean, it's done many things over the decades that it's been in existence. We've been very involved historically in disaster relief, in helping to mobilize and coordinate people to respond to animals in disasters, whether that be floods or hurricanes or even humanitarian crises. More recently, we've moved away from that specific pillar, and the two principal areas of a strategic focus for world animal protection now are related to, first of all, animals in the human food system. And so trying to help shift the practices of industrial farming that are resulting in a lot of cruelty and needless suffering of farm animals. And also the wildlife, animals in wildlife. How do we ensure that they are properly protected, that they are not being seen as just property, that somebody can buy a tiger or whatever, and reducing the exotic pet trade, as well as reducing the attraction of wildlife for entertainment purposes, particularly in tourism. And that's happened a lot through the years, that people who are well-meaning and just want to enjoy, say, dolphins, don't realize that if they are paying to go on some dolphin tour that allows them to pet dolphins, well, dolphins aren't designed to be confined to small spaces where you're allowed to pet them and that sort of thing. So these are the two pillars that at the moment World Animal Protection is working on. And so I'm the chair of our board. We, of course, have full-time staff members, and I am the chair of the board of directors, who is helping to set the strategic plan and having oversight over financial matters and all the typical functions of a strategic board.
And I notice as well, I just opened up the website, that there is some focus as well on what's happening for animal welfare during the Ukraine crisis. They're often forgotten, as you'll know much more than I do. Would you like to comment about that? Because it's so much in the headlines at the moment, Maureen.
Yes, it really is. As a matter of fact, in my upcoming episode of the podcast, I make reference to the situation in Ukraine. I mean, just a horrendous crisis of a war on a sovereign nation, and the challenges that that presents for the people of Ukraine, whether they have pets and they're trying to get themselves to safety along with their pets. Some are able to do that, take their pets with them, others are not. There are animal shelters where the animals don't have homes. There are zoos and aquariums where, you know, if you've got large wildlife in a zoo, you can't just pick up and move them because there are bombs going off everywhere. Not to mention the strife is equally the fear and the emotional reaction that people have in being in an environment like that of unsafety has a similar impact on animals. So it's a real problem. It's a real crisis. And as I say, World Animal Protection used to have a greater focus on disaster relief than it does at this moment in time. But we are still trying to do our part in helping to direct resources towards the Ukraine and the Ukrainian people in order to assist with this situation that's going on right now. We did similar things a couple of years ago with the bushfires in Australia. And as a matter of fact, World Animal Protection Canada and Canadians at large were incredibly generous and gave all kinds of donations to us, which we then directed to our partners in Australia to respond to the bushfires there.
That's good to hear. And we'll make sure that we put the link in the show notes to World Animal Protection Canada and the piece on animal welfare during the Ukraine crisis as well.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah, you're welcome. Moving into the podcast show, as you know, Maureen, lots of people think about starting a podcast show, but going ahead and doing it is a whole different matter. It's so much work. Tell us about that process. What made you think, I want to speak about this and share my passion and help tell stories and inform people. Tell us more about that.
Sure. So I have a theory that the vast majority of humans basically don't want to see animals harmed. They would like to think and want to support an environment that animals can thrive in. But they probably just don't have good access to all of the information about the things that they, as just an average citizen, can do to assist and support animals and to work towards better animal welfare around the globe. You see, certain issues seem too remote. If they're going on in Africa and you live in a small town in Canada, it may feel like there's not much you can do other than perhaps give a donation to something if you've got the resources to do that. So I wanted to tap into that space. How can we help ordinary people make some decisions of things that they can do that will make a real difference for animal welfare, both locally and internationally? And there are so many not-for-profit organizations that already exist out there, so that didn't feel like it was going to be a contribution that was overly helpful. And so I was aware of the growing popularity of podcasts. And so the podcast platform seemed like an excellent one for my purpose, which was, how do I get crisp information to people about what the issues are and some concrete ideas and suggestions to them about what they might be able to do? How can they be empowered in their day-to-day lives to make decisions that are helpful for animal welfare purposes? Podcasts seem like a really great way to go. Audio, a lot of people enjoy audio these days as opposed to reading things in print, or they like it as a supplement to what they might be reading. So it just sort of struck me as, hey, I bet you this is probably a good way of sharing some information that people might find helpful, might help empower them to make decisions in their daily lives that will contribute positively to the lives of all of the species in the non-human animal kingdom.
Mm. And were you listening to a lot of podcast shows when you were kind of thinking about the approach, and of course, animal podcast shows in particular?
Yes, I was. So I do have some podcasts that I enjoy myself of general interest. But before I got into launching the Animal Guide for Curious Humans, I did try to research what's already out there, because I don't want to just reinvent the wheel. And my impression was, number one, there were several and are several very good podcasts on animal issues that are focused on kids. And of course, that wasn't really my target audience to begin with, but that was good to know that that was out there. There are also a number of good podcasts associated with animal issues, but that are more subject matter specific. So that it may be animal law. There are definitely a couple of excellent podcasts that are focused on the legal issues associated with animal rights and animal welfare. There are also some animal specific podcasts. So dogs, as an example. There are some others where they may cover a wide variety of animals, and it's just they're of interest. It's just getting to know these species. Of course, you know, this is the thing. There's one species of human being, and there's over 1.2 million species of all other animals. So there's a lot to cover. So the BBC, as an example, has superb podcasts that cover a variety of different species. But I became comfortable that there wasn't really anyone in the space that I was hoping to go to, which was quick information and practical solutions, how to navigate our way through our daily lives in a way that is respectful and helpful to animals. So I did feel like there was a space for what I had in mind.
Mm, so really, in all this research, you were kind of focusing down and finding a niche. As you say, you found that space.
Exactly. Yeah. Another niche, I would say, is there are some superb podcasts out there that are principally associated with veganism and vegetarianism. So they speak a lot and very knowledgeably about animals in the human food system. But that too, I thought, okay, so that's narrower though than what I'm trying to do. And I know that the vast majority of people still to this day, globally, some 92% of the population are omnivores. They are still eating animal products. So if you're going to do that, how do you do that in a way that is the most thoughtful and respectful about the lives of these animals who are taken for the purpose of feeding us as humans? So yeah, I very much was trying to look for and ensure that what I had in mind was a niche that wasn't really met by others.
Mm. Now, for people who aren't familiar with your show, they've not listened to it yet, tell those listeners what it's about. What can they expect when they land on your website?
So what they can expect is a fairly broad range of subjects relating to animal welfare. So the inaugural episode, which is, I think, still one of my favorites, is with a professor, Kristen Andrews, who is a philosopher and specializes in animal cognition. So she helps lay the groundwork for understanding how much commonality there is between non-human animals and human animals across a wide variety of issues. Ability to understand that others have a mind, feelings, ability to feel pain, etc. So that was just one subject to really give a good sort of overview of why non-human animals have so much more in common with us than we actually realize. But we also cover everything from, we did a terrific episode on the factory farming problem. As I was mentioning earlier, animals in the food system is really one of the greatest crises of cruelty to animals because of the practices in factory farming. So what we do there is A, explain the problem. This was Steve McIver, the CEO of World Animal Protection International. He is explaining what it happens in that factory farming system, why it's a problem for those animals. And then we talked about some of the strategies people can use to be careful in their purchasing of animal products. We did an episode on dogs and dog training. There'll be many others on specific species that are of interest. We talked about wildlife, encounters with wildlife, and how to reduce adverse encounters or conflict with wildlife. We've got an episode coming up associated with cosmetics and when you're buying cosmetics and personal products, how to know how to read labels and be satisfied that the products that you're using are not tested on animals. So it's a fairly wide spectrum of issues. I think there's a little something for everyone, but what I try to do with every episode is give, to the extent possible, some concrete examples of what one might be able to do to be a part of the solution. And so how to use your purchasing power in an effective way to protect animals or some other strategies that people can apply in their day-to-day lives. So it's not only about, can you give a financial donation to some great animal welfare organization out there? It's what can you do on a day-to-day basis to make a real difference?
Mm. And I mean, I think that you're really accomplishing that goal, Maureen, because the thing that I love about your podcast show is that you get to learn so much. As you said, the factory farming episode and one of your more recent episodes about overexploited fish, some of the information in there, it sticks with you. And it's the kind of information that I'm not picking up in the news, probably because I'm not looking for it. But I can make more educated choices about, you know, exactly what I'm going to eat, what I'm going to buy. And I can think about the situation around the world with animals in mind and how my choices might impact them, which is really important.
I love hearing that. That's music to my ears because that's exactly what I'm hoping to achieve, is just giving people some ideas, some practical suggestions that they can apply. And you're right, I think some of this information, it's just not easily available elsewhere. So the aquatic animal episode, for example, with Catalina Lopez from the Aquatic Animal Alliance, yeah, it was a wake-up call to me. I did not appreciate that salmon and tuna, two of the most popular forms of fish, because those two are carnivores, they have to be fed other fish in order to produce salmon and tuna for us to put on our plate. So there's this incredible knock-on effect that was never really, it was just not something that I had paid much attention to before either. But anyhow, I'm thrilled to hear that for you, it's having that effect where it's just giving you some ideas and thoughts of changes or decisions that you can make in your day-to-day life.
And I think, you know, for anyone who wants to be a more thoughtful consumer, I don't like that word, a more thoughtful citizen, but mm-hmm. we are consumers because we have to buy things and consume things and eat. I think your show is really helping. And then, of course, there's the actual overall appeal of your show for curious humans. If you're curious about animals and you want to learn more, this is the place to come. And that's kind of a nice segue into the name of your show. Tell us how you came up with the name.
The name was one of the most complicated things. It was really funny. I thought I would be able to land on something fairly quickly, but it took quite some time. And here's why. First of all, certain names, you needed the name to be a domain that was available. And so I was doing a bunch of research on websites and podcasts and YouTube channels that had certain names. And so that eliminated some ideas that I'd had in the back of my mind.
And that's a really good point. Sorry to interrupt there, Maureen. Just a really good point for anyone planning a podcast show. Check out the name that you're looking at and make sure it's not in use by another channel or podcast show, because you'll have a hard time getting traction.
Exactly, exactly. And it was remarkable how many of the names that initially I was noodling turned out, you know, I was never going to be able to really get it off the ground because there was something too similar out there. So that was one whole layer, is it taken? The second layer is, as you know well, there's a lot of background research and data known about podcasts, just like there is pretty much everything in the world these days. And so there are certain recommendations of, well, you don't want the name to be too long because the podcasts that have longer names tend to not get as much traction as quickly. So I had that kind of background data on podcasts generally in my mind as well. And then how am I going to convey what I'm hoping for, which is to pique the curiosity of the listener? I wanted that to be in it. I also had really wanted to use the word sentient, because the understanding non-human animals as sentient beings, there's a lot of powerful messaging that comes out of that and a lot of interesting questions. So eventually what I did is I created a list of about a half dozen options for names. And I shared that with close family and friends and some colleagues, including colleagues at World Animal Protection Canada. And I did my own little mini survey of what do you think, guys?
Good for you.
And that really also helped me land on the Animal Guide for Curious Humans. At the end of the day, that is still a slightly longer title than I think research and data would suggest it ought to be. But I made the decision in the end I was going to go with it anyhow, because I liked the sound. I felt it conveyed what I was trying to do effectively. And I'm really pleased with it. And I've got some really great feedback. People seem to like the name. So it turned out in the end to work out well.
Yeah, I mean, it captures it, doesn't it? You have to be curious. That's the audience that you're appealing to. And the nice thing about your name is that it can be shortened. You know, you can refer to it as the Animal Guide, which is the website name, theanimalguide.com.
Yes, so, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a great choice.
Thank you.
So eventually you settled on that, and then you moved on to artwork selection and the whole look and feel for the website, the podcast artwork, the branding of your show. Tell us about that. You had a look and feel that you liked, didn't you? So to share more about that and how you kind of refined things.
Yeah, sure. So at the moment of getting ready to put the artwork together was last summer, and my two granddaughters were visiting us at the time. I now have a third granddaughter, so there's three of them, but there were two at the time. And
are they quite young?
They are. Clara is 5 and Madeline's just turned 3.
Okay.
Clara will be 6 in May. So these two girls love Winnie the Pooh. And so we watched a lot of Winnie the Pooh movies and episodes on television. And if anyone hasn't seen them recently, they're eternal. But one of the many magical things about them is the color palette. It's a very soft watercolor palette. And so it's inviting, it's easy on the eyes, and it just reminds you of this wonder of these marvelous animals who form part of the Winnie the Pooh crowd. I was really taken with that because one area that I find difficult myself as an animal lover is there's a fair amount of imagery associated with animal advocacy that is very difficult to look at. It's because the cruelty can be astounding. So when you have a harsh images come up in some television commercials and other things, in print ads on websites that are dedicated to animal rights and animal welfare, it can be really jolting and it can be off-putting. And I think sometimes the message gets lost because people don't want to look at the image. And so I quite purposely...
It's a shock factor.
It is, yeah. Yeah, and it, no doubt it's probably successful with certain members of the population to shock them into attention on an issue. But I worry about how many people don't even listen to the message because they just don't want to look at the image. Mm-hmm. So I quite purposefully wanted to have the artwork be soft, not childlike, because again, this podcast is really designed for adults and youth, you know, teenagers and such, but it's not a children's podcast. So I didn't want caricatures, but I wanted a softness to the artwork. And Kevin McCall did a fantastic job, in my opinion, of putting the artwork together. I really love the color palette and the interaction in the background of the animals with Flora. It landed exactly what I would have hoped to have. I have absolutely no skill in that area. Couldn't have done it myself, but I'm really happy with it.
There's a lightness to it, isn't there?
Yes. Yeah.
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 It's kind of got like a very slight fun element, but it's not silly.
Right.
And I think that lightness makes it appealing. It kind of appeals to that curiosity that we might have you want to go in and discover more.
Yeah. 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 That was exactly the intent. And fortunately, I think it is working well. I've, again, got some really nice feedback from listeners and people who are going to the website about the artwork. It seems to resonate.
Oh, that's great. I'm glad that you're getting that kind of feedback. It's really positive. Now, we've touched on the goal of your show a little bit. Is there anything that you want to achieve with your show that you feel that we didn't discuss earlier when we talked about the goals and the objectives of what you want to do? Like if you look, for example, into the next 6 months, what are your thoughts and hopes and aspirations for your show?
Yeah. Ultimately, what I'm hoping to achieve with this show is to generate conversation about the systems and the practices of humans that are having an adverse effect on non-humans, and to inspire behavioral change in we humans for the betterment of animals. That's really what I'm hoping to do. So I feel like if I can continue to pose issues and questions in a way that are easily accessible to the average person, that engages them in the issues. Because, you know, again, there's so much going on in the world and our attention is pulled in a wide variety of directions. And animals and the plight of animals can be something that just kind of gets lost in the maw of human life. And so I'm just hoping to bring these extraordinary creatures back and closer to the mix and closer to the decision-making that we as human beings make on a day-to-day basis to make decisions that are better for animals than other decisions we might make. So if I can be a part of that, that I'm thrilled with. There are a lot of really interesting things going on in terms of development of legislation, public policy in the legal realm. My last episode was talking about a very interesting legal case going on in New York State about whether legal personhood should be granted to Happy, who is an Asian elephant who is in the Bronx Zoo. There are really interesting things going on in that sphere as well. I really hope longer term, if we could see in my lifetime a universal declaration of animal welfare, similar to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights that virtually every country in the world is a signatory to. I mean, that would be extraordinary. And if I could have even a scintilla of impact in moving us in that direction, that would be great. But I'm going to continue to feel good about this podcast if it just generates some thought and ideas for people in a way that is accessible to them. And they say, oh yeah, I never really thought about that. Yeah, next time I go shopping for my skincare, I'm going to look for the Leaping Bunny logo or something, because I don't want animals to be tested for the purposes of something that is really a non-necessity for humans, like mascara.
And I mean, looking at your download numbers for your show, Maureen, you're already having that kind of impact. They're really high for a relatively new show. So that's the interesting, one of the interesting things about podcasting is that you can influence people. It's like the ripple effect, but you don't really know it directly. It's kind of happening out there, which is a great thing and a great feeling.
Yeah, thank you for that. I'm feeling good about it. I really am. It is a fair bit of work. So you want to feel like it's having some impact, but I'm really committed to it. And I'm really happy to see that our listenership seems to be growing strongly. And I'm feeling really, really good about that.
Are you getting any feedback from listeners?
I do. I get some. I'd love to get more. And again, I totally appreciate people are busy and they, you know, if it's between sending me an email and just listening to the show, then you go for it, just listen to the show. But I do, people reach out in a variety of ways through social media, or if it's someone that I know, you know, some former colleagues and others have reached out. An old friend from high school, as a matter of fact, who I hadn't spoken to in decades, had reached out and gave me some great input. Yeah. So I am receiving some great comments from folks.
And I think for people who do podcasts and they've had to maybe do some public speaking in their career, they don't think it's a big deal to be reaching out. But if you've never sent an email to a podcast host, it can feel a little bit intimidating, but don't be afraid, because people like Maureen love to get that feedback. So if you're feeling nervous about it or you're not sure what to say, just share your thoughts and feelings or ideas, because they're always welcome. So don't feel nervous about it.
Completely echo that, Sheila, completely. You know, it's a learning experience for us and it doesn't have to all be positive. You can give criticism or tell me if you found something confusing. All of that is just a source of learning for me as a podcaster.
Yeah. So Maureen, what for you has been the hardest thing about podcasting?
Besides just getting used to listening to your own voice, which really was a challenge for me, I have never liked my own voice. Fortunately, others seem to like it, but it feels weird to hear yourself recorded. And occasionally when I'm listening to podcasts in the car and my own podcast will be the next one up and it comes on and I'm listening to my own voice, it always feels funny. But really, the hardest thing up to this point, I would say, is just staying on top of the planning. So sending the invitations out for guests for the show and then following up with them, because what I'm finding is very often at first instance, you don't get a response back. And that may be because many of the individuals that I'm reaching out to are working with charities, small animal welfare charities sometimes. These folks are generally very overworked. And yeah, they probably don't have the time to stay on top of this the way, say, if I was reaching out to big companies or something can. But that is a challenge, is just getting the sequencing right, because you've got to get people agreeing to be on the show and then planning for the recording. Getting all of that lined up is probably what I would say is the most difficult thing about a podcast. And I'm pretty committed to putting something out every 2 weeks. So there isn't a lot of time to play with in terms of getting everything scheduled. So it does take quite a bit of time and planning.
Mm. And I don't know if I should say this, but I will. If someone's interested in being on your show and they have something to offer and an important message, would you like them to contact you? I'm hesitating because I don't want you to be overwhelmed.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Please do. As a matter of fact, we did have more recently, I was able to conduct an interview with someone who had reached out to me first and was exactly who I needed when I needed. So for sure, would love to hear from people. Yeah.
Good, good. Okay. And I'm sure I said this, but we'll have the link to Maureen's website in the show notes, and that has the contact form. So if you're an expert in some area of animal welfare and you think you have something important to say, by all means, get in touch with Maureen. And please, what's the best thing about podcasting, Maureen?
It is such a journey in getting to know people and deepening your knowledge of a subject. I am blessed and so grateful for all of the guests who've been on the show. I've learned from every one of them. They come from all over the world, all different backgrounds, and that is exciting to me. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be on a call tomorrow with someone who is in Nigeria. And, you know, I had an interview with Peter Lee, Professor Lee. He's actually in Houston, but he's originally from China. There's so much that you learn, and it enriches your own experience. And to be able to be a part of sharing that with the rest of the world through putting together a podcast and then knowing that people are learning and getting something out of it, that's the greatest feeling in the world.
Mm. And before you speak to some of these amazing guests, do you do much preparation?
Oh, I do. Yeah. Yeah. I research folks as much as I can online. I typically will have a pre-call with them to explore the areas that we could cover on the show, get their input on that, because of course they know their area of expertise best. So you want to have a really good idea about the individual, the organization that they work for or represent, and then do lots of planning in terms of what kind of areas of inquiry do you want to explore with them so that you make it a comfortable space for them, because the more comfortable they are, I think the better they're going to be able to communicate their messages to your audience.
Yeah. And what advice would you give to a new independent podcaster before starting their show?
Oh, I love this question. I feel so new myself that
You've got how many episodes under your belt?
We are
12, about, I believe.
12, yes, 12. So okay. Still relatively new. But I think the advice I would give is a couple of things. First, yes, do your homework. Be clear on what it is that you want to accomplish with your show. Get others engaged with the fine details, because you may not have the technological skills to do it all yourself. It becomes a team sport. Find support. Get the support, like with podmotion.co, who provide consulting support for you. That's invaluable for getting the thing off the ground, because you really want your attention to be on the subject matter of what you're doing. So the technical aspects of it, if you can have somebody else assist you with that, then I think that that's very, very valuable. And I think we all need to be prepared to modify and pivot as we need to. If the indication you're getting is people want to hear a little bit more about one area of the subject over another, be prepared to adjust according to how you're being received.
Hmm. Well, that's a really interesting point as well. Yeah, we get this plan in our minds, don't we? And we think, yes, I've put all this work into developing this plan, so I must follow it. So it's very interesting that you say we should think about pivoting if we need to. That's good. Really good advice. And are there any questions that you wish I'd asked you?
I don't think so. I think you asked a lot of really terrific questions. I'm really pleased to have had the opportunity to be here and share a bit about the show and my journey with podcasting as someone who does not come from a communications or marketing background. As I say, I'm a lawyer by trade, and I found myself in this fascinating world of podcasting, but with support from others like yourself and Kevin and others, it's been a great journey. So I really appreciate you reaching out and talking to me today.
Oh, you're welcome. It's been a fantastic conversation. And I will sneak in one last question, Maureen.
Sure.
I'm fascinated. I'm really curious to know what's on your podcast playlist. If you listen to a podcast today or tomorrow, what will it be?
Oh, fascinating. So the top podcasts that I go to regularly are from the Freakonomics grouping. So there's Freakonomics.
Yeah. There's
Stephen Dubner. That's right. There's people I mostly admire. There's Freakonomics MD. That whole series are general interest. Well, how in the impact with economics of a wide variety of issues. So those ones I listen to quite regularly. There's the Animal Law podcast. I listen to that. 10% Happier, which is a meditation podcast done by Dan Harris, who's a very experienced journalist. That one is one of my favorites as well.
Cool. They're great. We'll drop those links in the show notes as well. It's been a pleasure. Yeah, it's been a pleasure speaking with you, Maureen. I think listeners are going to learn so much from this interview.
I appreciate the opportunity to do it. Thanks for reaching out, Sheila.
Oh, you're welcome. You take care and have a great day.
Thank you. You too.